Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Love Bites, recording at Heritage Radio Network in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today is Monday, May 2nd. I'm one of your hosts, Jacqueline Raposo. I write about people who make food. You can find my work and me as at wordsfoodart.com. I'm 34, straight and single.
And I'm your other host, Ben Rosenblatt. Right now, I am living that beautiful actor dream, but I also am dabbling in the food industry as an occasional bartender and server. You can check me out at benrosenblattactor.com. I am 33, straight and single.
After the break, we're going to be joined by Daniel Knighton, a wedding officiate who guides couples through weddings of all sorts. So he's going to share some horror stories and moments that made him go all mushy, maybe. And we're going to pick his brain about if he's learned anything about what makes a marriage a successful one. But first, we have some explaining to do because we're not actually in the studio right now on May 2nd. It's magic. Woo!
that was my...
We're really bad at sound effects. We really need to up our game with the sound effects. But right now, Ben, you are on your way back to Maine, or you're in Maine already, and I'm...
Who knows where I am in reality.
And I'm on my way back to New York, because May 1st, we're at a friend's wedding, right?
I know. One of my absolute best friends on the planet.
Yeah, and who happens to be the guy that I dated for a decade. So we're pre-recording this back in April, and you're listening to it in May, the day after this wedding, when Ben is going back to do a show in Maine, and I'm coming back to New York City.
Speaking of weddings.
So we're going to get to the ex's wedding thing in a second, but...
But first, we're going to share some of our own experiences as guests at wedding. We're going to talk about what is our craziest wedding experience as a guest. Why don't you start?
So mine, it was already crazy because I had two weddings in one day. I was like 28 dresses.
Two weddings in one day?
Yeah, I was in a wedding in the morning in the off the coast of Connecticut. I was a bridesmaid. And so I'd gone up the night before to this like, you know, fancy, you know, ocean, you know, Fairfield County, Connecticut type of wedding. Okay. And then halfway through the ceremony, the 10-year ex and I jumped in the car and drove way out to Long Island for a cousin's extremely formal old-school Portuguese-European wedding. And so it was
Did you wear the same thing to both weddings?
No, I changed in the car. I literally, like, changed while he was driving. But the reason why it was crazy is because the day before, I had left my bridesmaid's dress on the Metro North train from New York going to Connecticut. And it wasn't until I was at my dad's house and like was getting ready to pick up the boyfriend from the train from a later train that I realized that I had left
it
hanging.
What'd you do?
I panicked. I didn't tell her. And I moved heaven and earth to get that dress back. It took 24 hours. I got it just in time to like leave to get up to the rehearsal dinner. Thought that I didn't, like my friend would never know. And then it ends up she had found out anyway because I had like frantically when I was trying to figure out if I could get another dress like last minute, I'd called the bridal shop and another bridesmaid was there while I was telling the woman crying, like I lost my dress, what can we do? So they told her and she told the bride anyway. So I got the dress back after 24 hours of literally like pleading to these women who, you know, run Metro North from different
points. Why would the friend tell the bride? It's like, you're just going to stress out the bride who already has so much stress.
Yeah. So we're like at the cocktail hour after the rehearsal and she's like, so how's your dress for tomorrow? And I was like, oh, it's perfect. Why? And she's like, so it's the bridal dress, right? It's the blue one with the sash. And I was like, dah. Yeah, so that was my craziest wedding experience, but it all worked out. Both weddings were beautiful, and I am here to tell the tale. What about you?
Wow.
Craziest wedding experience.
That is pretty crazy. My craziest wedding experience was I went to a wedding of a mutual friend of me and my... Like, I had an ex-girlfriend, and both of us were going to this wedding of a mutual friend.
How long was it after you had broken up?
It was like 8 months after we had broken up. We were together for like a little over 2 years.
Oh.
And she was dating someone else.
And she brought him?
No.
Okay, that's good.
And we ended up sleeping together while she was still dating this guy. And then a few months later, she ended things with the guy, and she and I got back together for a little while, actually. And then
so maybe the wedding prompted you eventually getting back together.
Oh yeah,
so it's crazy in a good part way.
Of it. Yeah, it was like a kind of a fun, scandalous little sexy time.
So the wedding that you and I are at in a couple weeks / yesterday is your best friend. You are in the wedding, and I will be sitting in the audience. So we both combed, listeners, we both combed the internet for like stuff, like, you know, going to an ex's wedding stuff. And they were all pretty cliche. It was like, look amazing and don't talk too much to his family. And if people ask you how you know him, don't like say, oh, I slept with him for X amount of years or whatever. And be nice to the bride. It was all very, I know all that stuff. Like, I'm not worried about that stuff. So Ben, you've
been
to...
What are you going to say when people ask how you know him?
Like, we went to college together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which we did.
Okay.
And I think most people that... people that know both of us know, but like strangers, yeah, we went. I'm one of the many college friends who's going to be at this wedding. So Ben, you've been to an ex's wedding. So I've boiled down my turmoil about this impending wedding to 2 points.
Okay.
And then I also have counterpoints / like takeaways that I'm going to practice at the wedding. So I'm going to share what they are,
yeah,
and then you advise me on your experience.
I will
someone
give you my
this.
Ultimate wisdom.
Okay. So my first problem. And this I hate admitting to myself, but I'm gonna be real about it, is that he wins. He gets married first. He wins.
Why is that winning?
Well, because here's why. Because A, it's the cliche thing. And so I'm going to get to my win, my counterpoint, and how my solution very soon. But basically, he and I have completely different approaches to dating. This is his first girlfriend after me. I've dated several other men since him. And so we both, when we broke up, we had very different tactics for dating.
Okay.
But, and
you're your back is stiff and
straight.
And
we sort of critiqued each other for them. We got in fights about it in a way. Like, this was 10 years that afterwards we had, you know, some things to figure out as we evolved into being good friends, which we are. I'm 100% behind his wedding. But, like, I feel like his tactic on dating sort of won. And as much as I don't feel like, you know, getting married is the goal in life, it's still, like, going to see him get married. I think maybe it's just a competitive thing.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, what do you mean? Why is it that, you know, you broke up and like both like raced off to try to get married?
No,
is that...
but I think if anything, including with the articles we did read, like the poignancy that I found in them was like, oh, if you're seeing an ex getting married, and getting married is something that you do want, or at least partnership is something you want, you feel like you're the one at a loss sometimes. So that's sort of, so it's there. And I feel like more cliche people might project that onto me as well. But my solution for that is, like, I just haven't met the right guy yet. Like, that's all it is. Like, I just haven't met the guy that I want to spend indefinite time with yet. And that's really okay. And I'm cool with that. I've got a really awesome life. And so just me knowing that, like, the only reason why I'm not where he's going to be is because I haven't met the guy yet. And that's really okay.
And I would say, knowing both of you, that you not only both have different approaches to dating, but different approaches to life.
Completely.
And I
don't want to be in his fiance's position. Or in his position right now.
And
with the life that he's chosen, which I'm fully supportive of for him, like, it's proof that we should not be doing this together.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And so I would say it doesn't boil down to a win or loss at all.
Know.
And I think that's, like, not necessarily a helpful or even realistic way to look at it.
It's neither, but it still exists. And so now that I know it and I've identified it, I can go in prepared to, like, just be not be thinking about he wins, but be thinking about I just haven't met the guy yet. So, well, that's my take.
I'll also be by your side convincing you that you're
you
a winner
will.
In just every way.
And you promised me every slow dance. So I'm going to hold you to that. So number two is that despite being 100% happy for him throughout his engagement process, and I have a feeling it's going to come up through the wedding, because I also want listeners to understand that I get that this wedding is all about him. It has nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me other than being a friend to him. It feels like the significance of our relationship that covered a decade is diminished a little bit. There have been points that I don't want to point out, but, like, there have been points during his engagement, again, it has nothing to do with me, but things that have been said or projected that make me feel completely insignificant because of, rightfully so, he's focusing on the relationship he's in the marriage, but it makes me feel like we don't have, like, I never existed. I wasn't significant. And it hurts.
That
and
can
I
be
don't,
hurtful. I understand.
Yeah.
That.
And I don't want it to. And there are things out of my control too. It's not me putting things out there. You know, it's points in the engagement process for somebody else. They're putting so much of their love and their happiness with each other out there for the world to see.
Absolutely. And I think anytime you have an ex who is moving on or you're moving, like that feeling happens over and over again, I think. And I think having it be the wedding is kind of like the final, ultimate, like big, you know, stab in the heart to some degree, you know?
Yeah. And there have just been things coming up in life that have sort of made that apparent. So I guess what my takeaway for that is, and I put 3 stars next to my notes here, is that there are things that I can't control. But what I can remember is that I know that our relationship was significant. I know that it was at intimacy at its most, at its deepest. We went through a lot together. We grew up together. I know even now that he and I still talk a lot. We're very supportive of each other's lives and work. It's also very clear that we should not be a couple. But I know that our 10 years together was significant. And so I can do what I need to do at this wedding, which is to be his friend and to support him because we are still friends. And so my job at this wedding is just to be another one of the many people who supports him. And if anything happens, if people say something that's insensitive or they're projecting their own weirdness onto me, knowing that we've dated for so long, I will just know inside myself that he and I had something that was significant. We have a friendship that is still exists and that I can love him and support him, you know, with his friendship love.
And I think he would say the exact same thing
about
you
would.
If asked.
I'm sure he would. And has this brought anything up from your experience?
I mean, not a ton. I did not have the same amount of time invested in the relationship of the ex, with the ex that I saw get married. But I would say that I agree wholly that it's not about you. And I think focusing on that, and like you said, focusing on being a good friend to your friend who is getting married is the right thing to do, and B, the best way also to not have to confront whatever negative feelings are coming up, focusing on the positivity that this guy who does mean so much to you is having a significant moment in his life, and being there and being proud for him and happy for him and all of that is like a good way to feel good for yourself on that day.
Yeah. And so I think now that we've talked through this, I have a couple sort of things to keep in my head, which is good. Listeners, wedding season is coming up. If you are going to an ex's wedding, please email us at lovebitesradio@gmail.com or tweet us. Like, how are you getting through it? What if you have any horror stories that
Jacqueline
you want to
needs
share?
Some moral support right
I
now.
I do. Even
like.
Though this is airing after the wedding, I don't know how I'm going to be feeling then anyway. I might be hungover. I'm definitely probably going to be hungover driving back to New York. So please like reach out and tell us your experiences, and maybe we'll do a blog post about them and collect them together and put them on the site.
We're going to take a quick break, but I urge you to send us all of your questions about anything you have about love to lovebitesradio@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter. We will be back shortly with Daniel Nyden.
The following program has been brought to you by Root 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Root 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Root 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com. The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes...
Which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. He'll be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? I'm not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes. And
some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Daniel Niden has married close to 150 couples since 1985. Before marriage equality.
I think it's called a marriage equality, yeah.
That's what I'd assumed the notes. before equality marriage, Jacqueline's wonderful notes. Before marriage equality, he also performed commitment ceremonies and helped Lambda petition New York State to write the current new law. So that is very badass of him, and we are very proud of him and thankful for that. Over a two-year stretch in the late 80s, Daniel was a regular on Good Day New York, appearing as a relationship expert panelist.
An expert relationship. Yeah. Just kidding.
It was like my eyes are crossing now. Too much sake. Daniel was a regular on Good Day New York, appearing as a relationship expert panelist due to his dubious freelance contributions to Playboy magazine. Because he continues to take on socially conscientious theater projects, he requests that couples donate to his officiant fee to whatever 501c3 he is working with. Currently, you can find all of that information at livinglotusproject.org. Welcome to Heritage Radio, Daniel Niden.
Thank you.
So 150 weddings are a lot of weddings.
Yeah.
Were there any where you had serious doubts about the potential of the couple? And if so, like, what warning signs do you see in couples about to tie the knot?
Normally, when a couple comes to me, before I even say that, what you guys talked about a little while ago was fantastic, and it ties into something that I want to say about bringing the best of yourself to the wedding, because you're asking people to write in and everything, so remind me of that, about what it is to bring the best of yourself to a wedding.
Definitely.
The warning signs, they don't usually come up in the ceremony, because I have three meetings with the bride and groom-to-be. And at the first one, we talk about what their idea of a wedding is. And then we get into the ceremony. And then by the time we get to the ceremony, I've gotten to know them. And we've done some exercises. So if it's not in the cards, the wedding won't happen, usually.
Has that happened where weddings have been canceled because of your guidance?
Yeah, yeah.
How did that go?
Well, you can tell a lot by the complaint and the groom, in this case, of one of them. I had them do the exercise that I require of everybody, and it caused them not to get married. And when he called to yell at me, he said, "I almost had her."
Oh, wait, what is this exercise that you do? That
it's a simple shrink exercise that someone told me about when I started doing weddings. And the couple, I might try it on you just to kind of give the idea of as if you were two, we're going to get married.
Will we fall in love by the end of it?
Or out. I don't know. But it's basically an I want exercise. So let's just say, Jacqueline, you, and it, there's no advantage to who goes first, but you're home.
You go first.
You get a clock.
Have to go first.
You get a clock and no phones and maybe Kleenex because someone's going to cry, maybe out of just emotion or whatever. Are you a crier?
No, but we have a challenge for this season about who can make the other one cry.
And so you basically start every sentence with the words, "I want," not "I want you to be on time more," but "I want to keep my name," or "I want kids," "I don't," anything that they might not know, or if they do know, you've been in a lot of cases these days, we live together before we get married. So there aren't as many surprises, but what would be just right off the bat, just say a bunch of stream of consciousness, "I want."
I don't want to have kids. I want to live in New York City or a major metropolis. I want to build a cabin in the woods 2 hours outside of that major metropolis that I can have both in life. I want to raise chickens and goats. I want to live a highly creative artistic life. I want to be a full-time writer. I want to travel a lot together. I want to cook a lot and have long, lazy dinners.
Okay.
Now
that was...
You want a lot of things.
I could keep on going.
That was like 12 seconds. Go ahead. For stream of consciousness.
Okay. I want to passionately pursue my career as an actor. I want to be able to have honest, open discussion about my wants and needs at any given time. I want to have an active, healthy sexual relationship. I want to go taste amazing foods and have great dinners. I want to travel and explore the world. I want to live in New York City, and I want to...
Okay. All right. No, it's cool. Unless you got it?
No.
Okay.
Good.
So that took...
Nothing Ben said turned me off, by the way, guys.
Okay.
I'm still...
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. So if that took like 20 seconds, imagine 10 minutes. So here's what usually happens. If they get into the real minutiae, like I want separate beds. I want, you know, one bed. I want separate bank accounts. I want our kids to have my last name, your last name. Or I don't want to go to your parents for Thanksgiving. I want to have it here. Like really applicable stuff that a couple would have. I want that 1 month every year to go off with my friends to go mountain climbing every year. I want Thursday for date night. I want whatever they are.
It sounds, it's like there's obviously would be much more
specific things
in an actual relationship as opposed to the hypothetical one and I were.
But the funny thing is if you're on the precipice of getting married, then those are the things that kind of matter. And if you did the exercise after 10 years, it would be way different.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. So what happens is everything goes dark after about a minute, maybe even 60 seconds, a little over 60 seconds. People don't know what to say. And I tell them, the other person can't talk. Silence. Silence. And then the cool thing happens with about 45 seconds to about a minute left, the real stuff comes out. And it's earth-shattering in some cases,
yeah,
but usually it's not a surprise. It's that maybe they'll might say, all right, fuck the I don't want. I'm scared of having kids because, and then something will come out because of something in their family or this or that or a trauma, whatever. But they come back to me after they do the exercise as a unified front. So that maybe keeps people knowing whether they really do want to get married or not. And if they do, the unified front, they carry that with them.
And if they, one or both of them don't, is it usually one or is it usually both?
Usually one that's a surprise to the other. And like I said, there's less surprises because people live together. But if they really own up to that they don't want, you know, if money is a huge deal and I want my own money through the whole thing, the other one can't deal with it. There's been, in all this time, there have been two weddings canceled because of it. And one, they were both just relieved. They were so happy that they finally got to it. And one had been afraid to raise it to the other. The other one was very angry.
And that was because of money or because of something?
That one was because he really didn't want kids. She did. But she was a trophy for him. And I kind of knew when they came in and everything. You can tell when people are in a wedding meeting, they advocate for each other. The ones you know are going to last. They have a language all their own and they advocate for each other. And it lasts all the way through the ceremony. And, you know, I stay in touch. I'll hear, like, I'll do baby namings or I'll get close to them because I'm their sort of family druid after a while. And then I'll do, like, funerals and you get to see them. And there is something to be said when you find that right person. And based on what you said before, you're so relieved when you finally realize that wasn't the right person. So there's a relief there.
When weddings are, I mean, weddings are not just about the couple, obviously, and they're huge monetary losses as well. So what happens when that couple, in your experience, then, I mean, presents it to their families? Because that's, I feel like a lot of the pressure on weddings is from the people footing the bill.
It's usually handled and accepted with grace, where the person just returns the gifts. They say sorry, you know, and they get a lot of support from a lot of people.
So it's not as dramatic as we might be putting it up to be.
It's not the end of a huge movie. They just they cancel it out and they move on and they we're strange beings. We find the relief when we have to. We find the road to relief when we have to. We don't want to just, you know, suffer over. There's other things to suffer about down the pike, so we don't suffer forever for those things.
So you've done 150 weddings almost.
Yeah.
How has this shaped your view of the institution of marriage?
I believe in love. I believe in a sense of true love. I marry a lot of people that knew each other. What's one of the most beautiful things is marrying a very much older, like 60-something couple that have already been, they knew each other, they went through their own lives, they maybe became widows and widowers, and it's something to see when they finally get together because their kids are so misty-eyed about it. There are some true happy endings out there.
Aww.
On the other hand, there was a wedding where there was an Irish guy from Ireland. His family had never been to New York before, and there was a Jewish girl, and the mother had planned the wedding she'd always wanted for her daughter, but when they all came from Ireland, they weren't really into the showy stuff, and she did a very brave thing. The night before the wedding, she changed the whole thing to beer and sandwiches and rock music from what it had been, and the Irish family was like, thank God! Like, they were so happy. All the pictures of arms around each other, of all the siblings, it was fantastic.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I love it when people can just change their mind for the better.
I mean, wow, what a sacrifice, I feel like, especially for a bride who, you know, oftentimes spends so much of their lives fantasizing about the wedding that they want. to be able to make that shift for her partner or for her partner's family.
I make a case for that, that we were exposed to weddings in Disney movies and TV and everything, that, or we go to them. You have an idea in your mind what your wedding is. It may be back there until you need it, but people do have an idea of what their wedding might look like. Yeah, and what I try to do with a couple is like, what do you want? When you walk down the aisle, I want to watch you nodding your head interior, like, this is exactly what I wanted. That's what I look for.
Do you ever encounter couples who have totally different ideas of what their wedding is going to look like, and how do you navigate that?
Usually, generally speaking, in a male-female wedding, usually the grooms defer and they advocate for what the bride wants. I guess that's a generalization. I just did a wedding, though, of two men, and they had planned this thing down like a surgical operation, and it was fabulous because they had all their friends. They totally threw a party, the most generous party you can imagine for their friends, and it was a beautiful thing to behold. And you could see they're also late 50s, so this was a real culmination of many years of love and sacrifice, and you could tell that there had been a lot of drama from everything you can imagine. It was beautiful.
So weddings are so stressful to plan, from what I've heard from all of my friends who've done them. So what are some things that you see people overstressing about that you really want them to give themselves a break on and not take so seriously?
Here's a scenario. Let's imagine, I'm just going to use the bride's mother because that's almost the cliche thing to do. One thing, if you're going to get married, make sure that when you go to look for your dress, that your mother does not buy her dress that day. Talk about, that's the biggest jinx I've ever seen.
Really?
If you're a mother out there going, because it just shows that you're putting yourself over your daughter.
Aww.
And it's, you know, maybe it's a little, even sounds sexist in this day and age, but it's true. If she gets defeated and you get your dress, a lot of other stuff might go wrong. To that end, there's a lot of mothers that they get it. The daughter maybe thinks she wants to plan, but the mother is sort of like, yeah, I know, I'll take care of that too. So you get a lot of overbearing moms. And I say to the bride and groom to be, if she's obsessing over the flowers, let her. For the next 4 months, let her. Don't fix it, because then she'll find something else to obsess about. So just
let her have her thing.
Let her have her thing. Even until the wedding, just, you know, just don't return the calls and do it. So, because it's a very emotional thing. Why weddings are so big, I think you asked in some way before. Post-World War II, what did we want? We wanted our kids to have more than we had from like the Depression days. So these huge weddings, these million-dollar weddings came to be. And it's not necessarily what the kids want, but it's certainly what the parents, they want to show what they've done for their families.
Mm. So with all the weddings that you've been to, what is your top tip for making sure that everyone, like you mentioned, you asked us to remind you of this before, that everybody is showing up as their best selves with as much love as possible, a mantra that we can put, like, especially because even if you have no connection to the bride or groom, weddings can be a lot of
stimulation. Or if you're going to your ex's wedding.
I don't know if it's something specific or something more general.
Generally, I would say bring the best of yourself to the wedding. So what that might mean is, let's just say it's 20 minutes before the wedding and someone's getting out of a car and happens to be raining. Volunteer to take the umbrella out to do that. How can I help? What can I do? It's counter to envy. It's counter to bad feelings. You know, there's the thing everybody wants when they're there and they feel like a stranger, they're at a table, they don't really know people, and then your mind starts to wander like, please God, let that person not eat their cake. I would love that cake. You know, there's that aspect too. But bring the best of yourself to the wedding. That's why there's so many jobs at weddings. You can take someone's tux back for them. You know, if you pre-arrange, I tell the brides and grooms, give people jobs. They want, you know, tell people if you're going to sign the license, you want two cross pens that you can take back to work. Have someone get you something. So people like to offer something of themselves, because that's why you're there. And it's good to remember it's just a day in their life. It's just a day in your life. Then you're going to go back to being friends or being acquaintances or whatever it is. It's, you know, they put a lot of thing of, if anybody sees any reason why these two shouldn't, it's not us anymore. You know, that isn't really, we don't think that way. It's not a village mentality that way. It's, we're all here. We brought the best of ourselves. It costs a lot of money to go to a wedding, whatever. I don't know. When you think about how much that's going to cost you to go. And that's a big reason.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yep. That's why we're sharing a room.
Right, exactly. That's
why we're sharing a room?
That's the excuse as to why we're sharing a room.
That's why this is radio.
Yes. Daniel, I have a question. You've done so many of these weddings. You've seen so many different couples. What have you learned from these, some of the couples that you've married that you can bring to your own relationship?
I think that revalidating where you are, whatever is the relationship that you've got, is important. Just to say, all right, now we have kids, or now we're in a bigger house, or now our career's changed and we're doing this, or it's my turn. All right, I worked while you were in law school, now it's your turn, I need this. That's hard for people to ask, believe it or not. Yeah. So I think that age doesn't play into it as much, although when you can't double your age anymore, you see things differently. You do see the end of things. You see the end of childhood of your kids, and then you're going to be alone again. You know, you see, you know, empty nest kind of stuff. You see how much you want for them. Don't make the mistakes I made and everything. So I guess I can always fall back on the idea that I know what I love. I've learned, if nothing else, not to be judgmental. Boy, I mean, seeing all these weddings and all these families, you watch people's faces. If I'm marrying the couple and I look in the father's eyes, he's somewhere, just kind of his life truly is passing before him. Mm. And it's beautiful. It's really powerful. I mean, this is kind of corny, but when I meet a couple and I start my little talk with them, I say, take the word spiritual apart and you get ritual. And that's what a wedding is. It's a ritual. But a ritual is strong stuff. Like, you know, putting our hand over our heart, or holding the door for someone, or throwing rice at a wedding. These are all really strong rituals. Drinking wine, breaking a glass, or having a mass or stuff, or having someone that you love getting up and reading something for you, standing up for you. There's that phrase. That's strong stuff. Mm. So it's something we all do. And it goes right back to respect and right back to bringing the best of yourself to the wedding.
Before we ask you our final question outside of this conversation, is there anything we haven't asked you that you want our listeners to know about the process? Because a lot of them are going to be getting married in the next, or we hope a lot of our listeners are going to be involved in this wedding season, if not on the altar, and definitely in other perspectives. Is there anything you want them to take away from this?
It's, like I said about it being a day, make sure you check in. Your parents do want to do stuff for you. Manage them. They want you to manage them. They don't want to push something on you. And in some cases, they do. I had a Jewish wedding where we had the ketubah that they paid a lot of money for on ketubah.com to get one. And the father brought in the form that he and his wife had, and it really insisted that they use that. And it had a bad effect. And we had to take him aside and say, it's not your wedding. You know, so you can see the kids knew he was going to do that. They really did, but they were hoping he wouldn't. Take care of that stuff. It's a time. I always tell, I'll use it in this case. If you two were getting married and she had big personalities in her family, believe it or not, that's your job now to advocate for her. So you're
have big personalities.
So you're the one that has to go and say, I can't have this. You can't do that. Aww. This is what I want. And it really tells, that's going to be a kind of a theme for the rest of your relationship. You advocate for her, she advocates for you, and that's the unified front I was talking about.
I love that, because that's what I want in a relationship. I want co-advocacy.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, we're going to put a bow on this here and try to tie this back into the beginning of the show, where Jacqueline and I shared our craziest wedding experiences.
Attendee experiences.
Yes, so yeah. I imagine you've attended some weddings not as an officiant as well. Do you have like a crazy wedding story you want to share
with
us?
Well, back to this one actually did happen to me. There was a bride who really wanted to marry somebody, and he was very elusive, and it was one of those where she even knew that he was. They'd had a couple of like moved dates and everything, and she said, I have him. Again, that's telling when someone says,
yeah,
I've got him. And she wanted to have it on Valentine's Day, and it was at her house, and her parents were going to cook, and they were immigrants, and all the food was being made. And I kid you not, he walked down the aisle with his car keys in his hand. And he parked the car this way in the driveway so they could go right out. And as we were starting the ceremony, he put his hand up very weakly, like he was ill, and he said, I can't do this. And left.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. That was not silly. And it was, but then I talked to her and she said, yeah, I guess I knew. And it was one of those. And
yeah, what happened with the rest of the day?
They had the best party ever. Her parents made sure that that was the best party for her possible. They really showed, it's like, no matter what, we love you. And that's
heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking, and I guess.
Tough way to end the show.
Yeah.
All right. One other thing, don't ever tie your rings to the collar of your favorite dog, like the pet that you share.
Right.
They run. They all those people and everything. And that's something you don't want to do.
That's a little nicer.
That's funny, at least. Daniel, thank you so much
coming
on the show today. We hope to have you back at some point on the line. Listeners, you can if you want to hire Daniel, more is on our website, lovebitesradio.com. And you can just email us directly, lovebitesradio@gmail.com, and we'll get you in touch with him. Or more to find out more about his work, you can find him at livinglotusproject.org. That's our show today for today. Come back next week. I'm going to be back live in the studio with returning guest co-host Chef Daniel Holtzman for our show on bartender bodies. Pilates instructor Marcia Polis trains those in physically active fields like bartenders, chefs, and actors with the quite fitting catchphrase, because it shouldn't hurt to do your job. It's the first in our Bodies Ourselves series, and she'll be in with one of her recently trained, now muscly bartender students. So find more.
Lucky you.
I know. So find more about that on lovebitesready.com and come back next week to join us. Until then, thanks to our engineer this week, Jack Inslee. It's awesome to have you with us, waving your hand over there, Jack. We've missed you. We are Jacqueline Raposo and Ben Rosenblatt, and I'll be back here the same time next week at heritageradionetwork.org.
Later.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.